Welcome to the Confidence Through Health podcast. My name is Jerry Snyder. As a health, wellness, and sports performance coach, my goal each week is to bring you experts to help you take control of your health and build your self-confidence. Thanks for including me today on your journey to better health. I'd like to thank our sponsor for this episode, All In Health and Wellness. If you're looking for a health coach, you're looking for a sports performance coach, you're looking for nutrition guidance, like for instance, a meal-by-meal plan that will help you understand how to eat, it will teach you how to eat, and it will give your body, your cells, the proper nutrition to feel great and be able to perform at your best, not just physically, but also emotionally and mentally. If you're looking for those things, you're looking for the key to improve your sports performance, both from a nutrition standpoint and an exercise physical standpoint and a mental standpoint as you approach your athletic event, All In Health and Wellness is able to help in these areas. Go to allinhealthandwellness.com and you'll find the contact information for how to get in touch with them and get started on the plan that will improve your life. So Neil, I want to thank you for being a guest on the Confidence Through Health podcast.
Thanks, Jerry. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, and I'm excited. You've got your foot in a couple of different places in the healthcare space, and I think it's important to touch on many of those areas because, as you were just saying before we recorded, the sandwich generation that we're in is like, okay, how do I handle this? How do I handle that? I've got to prepare for these different things, and for those people that are stuck with, you know, let's go into the health insurance piece first, like dealing with health insurance issues, whether it's like severe issues or just, you know, what am I paying for? My coverage doesn't seem to ever want to work.
Yeah.
Right. So what drove you into getting into like, okay, there's healthcare issues and we've got some ideas to fix this.
Yeah. Great question, Jerry. So, you know, I'm kind of like an outsider to the industry. You know, up until my mid 30s, I was working in the finance industry in New York City. I was managing an investment fund, and I suddenly found myself becoming a caregiver. You know, in a couple of years, in short sequence, I helped care for my grandfather through dementia and kidney failure and end of life care. But really, my mother did the majority of the caregiving, but I was like in the family, kind of like care coordinating and helping. And I realized kind of firsthand how broken our care system is and how difficult it is when somebody, a loved one in your family, has a serious illness or a major diagnosis. Like, you know, we have some of the best like hospitals and surgeries and, you know, therapeutics in the world. We also have some of the worst kind of caregiver support and home care, you know, I think. And it really, the burden falls on the family. So, you know, as they say, you know, it's the family gets dementia, you know, the one person doesn't get cancer, the family gets cancer, you know, and I've lived that experience. So, you know, in this case, like I observed that journey. And I was like, wow, you know, we have such difficulty getting help with his care that my mom left her career to just full time be his caregiver. And that lasted for years, you know, and it was really difficult for her and for all of us. And she never returned to the workforce after that, you know, because at that time she's in her mid 50s. And then shortly thereafter, I became a caregiver for my wife, 3 years of cancer and serious illness. And, you know, at that time I was running my investment fund and it was like just exhausting, you know, to try to find care help. Couldn't do it on my own. So, you know, I kept taking sabbaticals for my work and eventually wound down my work and became her full-time caregiver. Yeah. Now, thankfully, knock on wood, she had a successful outcome and has been in remission for a few years. So, you know, that has been like a positive ending to the story. But at that point, I just became obsessed with kind of healthcare, caregiving, just kind of like the struggles of, you know, I would say sandwich generation family caregivers across America. I observe so many people in cancer support groups, dementia support groups that are just absolutely drowning in all of the tasks and responsibilities they have to do for a loved one through serious illness. So that was kind of my first foray into it. I was stumbled into specifically the health insurance side is during my wife's cancer journey, there were a lot of times when treatments didn't work. There were a lot of hospitalizations. There were, at one point was in ICU in a medical coma. Yeah. I mean, we were just absolutely drowning in denied claims. And it was infuriating because at that point we had been in the workforce for, let's say, approximately 15 years each. Both of us had paid so much in premiums, you know, like insane amount in premiums. Like I did the math at one point and it was like literally over $300,000 of like how much we had paid or the employer paid when you added up. And we had received almost minimal care, you know, knock on wood, I've been a reasonably healthy person. I barely, I mean, at some point I wouldn't even go to the doctor, you know, for years. And, you know, my wife, like minimal checkups and stuff like that. So we had withdrawn minimally from the system and paid so much into it and had like what we thought was pretty good insurance. And we were just like drowning in denials. And it was like infuriating, but I thought it was like, oh, this just happened to us. It's bad luck. You know, at some point, instead of fighting the bill, you just pay out of pocket. You have some savings and you're like, whatever, you know, I'm in the middle of a crisis. I don't have time to think, you know, that, okay, can I pay for this drug? Are we going to go to the hospital or worry about a bill? So you're just dealing with it. Other times you're fighting it when you have time, but it's very stressful. But later, as I, you know, and I'll talk about, you know, later kind of what I did, but I started CareAI at this caregiving platform. I observed this was happening to thousands of people across the country. So I've become absolutely obsessed with, you know, the health insurance claim denial crisis and just how much people are struggling to get the care they need. And that really led me to kind of both, you know, write the book here, you know, here's a copy, Insured to Death. You know, and it's really, you know, it's really, I mean, the subtitle is how health insurance, you know, screws over Americans and how we take it back. And, you know, I think that, it's been an awakening for me in helping so many people navigate care across the country, how much burden people are having dealing with health insurance, you know, whether it's an Obamacare plan, whether it's a Medicare Advantage plan, which, you know, now more than half of older adults in the country who are on Medicare are actually opting for Medicare Advantage. These are private plans with very high denial rates, or sometimes even it's an employer-sponsored plan. A lot of times people are realizing health insurance isn't actually health care, and they are really struggling on getting the care they need, whether it's medication somebody prescribed, whether it's a surgery, procedure, hospital stay, blood tests, et cetera. And it creates a lot of like financial toxicity for people and just paperwork burden. So yeah, it's become kind of like an obsession, I'd say over the last year or so, of like, what can we do? How can we use creative thinking to fix this? How can we empower patients to fight back? How can we reduce the burden on clinicians, you know, doctors and nurses drowning this stuff? And how can we advocate for a better system? You know, I think those have all become like a mission.
Well, and you hit on a couple different things there, but the one big one I want to make sure, and I've said this before when I've talked to people about health insurance and going through, you know, cancer or other, you know, where it's not just a one and done, you know, like, okay, you go in for surgery, you're done, you're rehab, you're back. But like those long-term things where those denials, the financial stress that that adds, of getting another bill and says, okay, your final statement or your final notice to try and pay something. And like you said, there's times where you're just like, okay, whatever, like pull the money from, you know, or borrow the money from a family member or whatever it is. And in that financial stress, like adds up, because as you said, a lot of these people, whether it's, it definitely usually the person that's going through it.
Yeah.
But then the support systems are also having to cut back from work.
100%. 100%. I mean, I think that, you know, and there's been some emerging research papers about what they call the financial toxicity of cancer. I'm glad that this is even a research topic, but it's reality. A lot of people go bankrupt. You know, like you get cancer, it's not that your life's over. Thankfully, we have really good treatments and medications where many times people are able to survive. But your financial life is sometimes often over for sure. You know, you are going to, that diagnosis, sadly, in modern America, might result in your personal bankruptcy 2 years from now.
Right.
And that's how bad the situation is on the ground. Same with dementia and same with all these situations. Like, you know, there's minor financial stress, which might be, oh, I got hit with a few $100 bill, $1,000 bill, which don't get me wrong, is not actually minor. It's major for many people.
Sure.
That creates stress in the moment of how do I pay this? Or somebody rejects something that your insurance is supposed to cover. And then you're like, oh, I can't get this medication. And I have to either fight, waste hours on the phone researching stuff, or I'm just going to forego it. That happens a lot. Or there's just like the actual financial toxicity, which is like you got all of it. A lot of it was rejected. You had a big hospitalization, rejected. And now you're fighting the bills for years, or you just have to file bankruptcy because you can't pay it.
Right.
And I think that is like very, very sad in modern America. And especially, and frankly, this is happening to insured people. That's the saddest part. It's not like these are not, you know, uninsured population where it's like, hey, you rolled the dice or you didn't have the money to pay for insurance and you just got unlucky. This is like you have insurance, whatever plan you have it through, you thought it was there and no, it just didn't cover, you know? And I think that's kind of like a shame. And it's because of the paperwork mess. You know, there's a lot of like random reasons, whether it's, oh, billing code errors, medication or medical necessity denials, you know, like there's reasons why they're denying. And if you take the steps to appeal and appeal properly, you can really win. But I think it's kind of like a cat and mouse game that's harming a lot of people, both financially, but also stress-wise. And I would say it's actually killing people. You know, if I've seen this when my wife was going through cancer, like when we were so stressed out about this, it's like, okay, you already have somebody who's going through major, major intensive treatment. It's touch and go. Is it going to work or not? And to get that stressed, that upset, that, oh, this bill, can't do this drug. Oh, we just had this hospital visit, and oh my God, how did they bill us for all this? It's like the panic and anxiety it creates. I think that literally ends up killing people. So yeah, it's like a societal crisis.
Well, and the other piece that's killing people is like you said, is it's the doctor says, I need this medication or this thing, and the insurance says, no. You don't need that. You need something else that's cheaper, because there's a cheaper option out there. Get the cheaper thing, but it's not equivalent, and so it's not going to give you the same outcome,
100%.
right?
And
And
that's
so
like,
it's like, if the doctor's
there's
saying
been
it,
investigations on this stuff, and it's crazy. I think this wasn't always like this. Like, of course, insurance companies always had to regulate to some degree how much care people get. But, when you look at like some of the major insurance plans, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, the average denial rate was like 1%, 1.5%, 2%. More recently, 20 to 30%. So it's kind of just like, it's become a game. It's become a game where they can just do it and get away with it. And I think there's a variety of reasons for that. And I kind of like laid out a few theories in my book. One of them is the passing of Obamacare, combined with a pretty hands-off approach to the insurance industry, resulted in. And this is a bipartisan issue, right? Because we've had Democrat presidents and Republican presidents since. It's been 15 years since, or almost, oh, 16 years. Both administrations looked the other way while there was a series of health insurance mergers and then mega mergers. So Obamacare pushed a lot more Americans onto health insurance plans, which then the plans are able to make guaranteed profit on, right? Because the government kind of gives them a catch up if they end up losing money, and then next year they can set higher rates. But beyond that, the insurance all merged with each other. So now in most states, two or three insurance companies control like 90% of the market. And you look at you look at a company like UnitedHealth, and there was a big report out last week called the Sunlight Report on UnitedHealth, and it's really highly recommend everyone worth reading through. They own 2,700 different companies. Like literally, they own other insurance companies that they bought over the last 10 years. They own the companies that dispense medications. They own companies that deal with claims processing. They own physician groups. I read somewhere they employ, I think, over 100,000 physicians or something, some insane numbers. So, yeah, the company is almost in everything. And this isn't just one company. Aetna, the big insurance company, is owned by CVS, the pharmacy. So, it's kind of like there has been an insane amount of merger activity in the industry over the last 10 to 15 years that has led to an enormous concentration of power. And I think that is really unfavorable for patients, and it's really unfavorable for doctors, nurses, and hospitals around the country. So yeah, it's become kind of like health insurance has become the entire healthcare system, and it's controlled by a handful of companies, and I don't think that's good for anyone.
Well, and you mentioned doctors and physicians a couple times in there, and sometimes they become the middleman, and they can be the person that's like, why are you charging me so much? Why are you, and but on the other side of it, like they've got to raise their rates above, because if it gets denied, the portion that's getting denied, they've got to get enough to get through for them to pay their bills, for them to be able to
Oh
do the things
yeah.
that they do, right?
100%, 100%.
And so if you were selling something or doing anything, and you're like, oh, I'm going to do all this, and 25% of what I do, I'm not going to get paid for, you're going to charge a lot more for the other stuff that you do. Like, it's just
100%,
normal
100%. And
numbers.
these doctors, they don't want to be bill collectors. So, when the doctors are sitting there doing a blood test on someone or doing a procedure, and then after the fact, the bill got rejected, many times the docs will like not aggressively collect because they're like, look, this is my patient. I have a relationship, especially for small clinics and everything. It's like somebody's name, right? So if you're like Dr. John Smith, you're going to send a collections letter to the cancer patient for the biopsy. It's like you just feel like, ah, that's not my MO. Let me wait to see if insurance pays. Let me fight it out a little bit, right? 3 months later, 4 months later, 6 months later goes by, and insurance ain't paying at that point. Then you might gently start sending a reminder. And then at some point, will you send it to a collections agency or not? Best case, those guys might pay you 10 cents on the dollar. So I think a lot of the doctors will just kind of like eat it, to your point. And then that raises the rates of other things. So yeah, I actually think that, I'm glad you brought that up, because the second order impact of this that I think a lot of people don't appreciate is that it is resulting in a lot of doctors leaving independent practice and saying, all right, I can't deal with this. Let me go work at UT Health System. Let me go work at a massive hospital. Let me go work at Memorial Sloan Kettering, which is fine, right? Big hospitals need doctors too. But there is a, you could almost chart this. The rise of health insurance power in this country is directly correlated with the decline of the independent physician. And like, I think independent physicians are, some of the most awesome like people in America. They have like, if you think 40, 50 years ago, this was like the sacred relationship, between the independent physician and the patient. Without this kind of mediator, it's also just cool from like, I really love small business. And I feel like that's like the cool part of the country is like, people can go into practice on their own, build a reputation, build a practice. Of course, it's awesome. We have big hospitals too. But I just think that why kill off a large segment of the population? There are tons of physicians who would be amazing at being independent. And when you increase all this bureaucratic paperwork burden on them and just drown them in like insurance stuff, then they're like, all right, let me just tap out and go work at a big hospital. Where then, it's fine, but then they're employed at a big hospital and then somebody else does all the claims and billings. Now, hospitals aren't having it easy too. The rural hospitals are getting absolutely jammed on this. So I'd say the rise of insurance has most greatly impacted independent physicians and clinics and rural hospitals. And it maybe almost just like all the healthcare businesses being favored towards big hospitals who can deal with this. And even they are struggling. But I think it's kind of it's a shame the impact it's having on the clinical side.
Well, and where I am in Texas, I'm not exactly rural, but there's a lot of rural areas around where I am, right? Texas is a big state. There's a lot of open area. And yeah, there's several hospitals that have closed in the last 3, 4, 5 years in rural areas, and so then now you've got a whole nother burden on the patient, right?
Drive 3 hours for a brain scan because you might have dementia, right? And there's no hospital. Yeah, we see this. I'm in North Carolina and we're in Raleigh-Durham, and Duke Hospital is here. But like there's tons of places in North Carolina where the hospitals similar to you have shut down. So, we got people whose like mom and dad has dementia or they think they have dementia and they're driving 4 hours to Duke Hospital to get a scan because like the hospital in their area is shut down. It's a
And so
shame.
it's and that adds that like unseen or that financial expense, that stress, all that other stuff, 'cause it's one thing to go, okay, my doctor's 10 minutes away, or the hospital's 20 minutes away, and like, okay, so if I have to go for an appointment, okay, it's an afternoon, I might be there a little bit long because they're delayed, whatever. But it's not, I've got to plan an entire day around this, or maybe 2 days, because I got to get there, spend the night for the 8 o'clock appointment,
No, you're right. You're right. And you can see that in the numbers. Health outcomes are worse. Like that is like unilaterally. I was recently presenting the book and our work at area in rural Virginia, which like it's like we're near the North Carolina Virginia border, and went over there, and a lot of their hospitals have shut down. And I did this research, and I kind of like I wrote an article about it. It's Danville is the name, Danville, Virginia. So and here in Raleigh Durham, it's like a thriving, fast growing mid-tier city in America. And between Raleigh and Danville is about an hour drive. Between Raleigh and Danville, life expectancy drops 10 years. The average
Holy
person here
cow.
lives 78, the average person there lives 68. Yeah, and it wasn't like that 15, 20 years ago. It's exactly because of what you said. You have, certainly there's been deindustrialization, right? Which I think is something else to talk about, where a lot of job loss in that community. But on top of that, the reduction in healthcare access then is like, okay, I'm not going to go for checkups. Oh, I'm going to go for that dementia visit, to the main hospital because I got to drive. I'm going to do that once in a while. I'm not going to do it casually. So I think less healthcare access equals worse health outcomes. And people don't catch chronic disease as early. People don't take preventive measures as early. And as a result, people are literally dying 10 years earlier than they should be. And adjusting for all other stats, like that shouldn't be happening. So I think that is like literally a failure of our healthcare systems. We almost have two healthcare systems in this country.
Well, and the insurance is driving so much of that,
100%.
in the last few years. And it is getting out of hand, like you said. It's those larger companies that are now in charge of everything. And so, and so you mentioned that the death of the independent physician, but one of the things that I'm curious about is your thought on the concierge physician, practice that are starting to open up. Because in fact, my doctor, who's part of, he's inside one of the major hospitals in the area, but he let me know that in maybe the next 6 months or so, he may be looking at changing his practice in a way and implementing some concierge physician type stuff. And so, like, I'm like, oh, cool, because I actually think that's probably the way we all should be leaning towards for care,
Glad you
is
brought that
like,
up.
because that opens the door to better communication and better access.
Glad you brought that up. I mean, literally, so I kind of, yeah, so in the book, like literally, insured to death, I didn't want to make it just negative, although it's kind of, I think the cover is
Yeah,
very
it's
provocative. Like I really wanted to make it kind of like more positive and solutions oriented. And, I think there's individual patient empowerment solutions, which I shared in the book. But what I think is a system-wide solution is a free market solution. We need to get rid of this bureaucratic mess that has like favored insurance companies at the expense of all other types of healthcare. And we need to see what's already working on the ground. And what's already working on the ground is kind of what you're doing, direct care. There's a lot of docs who are saying, you know what, I'm sick of this. I don't want to deal with this. And right now, the challenge is when they go, like things like direct primary care, like concierge, things like that. Right now, a little bit of the challenge is then they have to put in subscription amounts. And many of the people who are already maybe getting health insurance through work, et cetera, have to view it as, hey, this is an additional expense, right? Which is fine, nothing wrong with that, but it's only able to cater to like people who have that extra means or want to invest in their own health and maybe have, disposable income. But where I think the country can go is, what I laid out in the book is like a three-layer solution where if instead of subsidizing health insurance companies through tax subsidies, right, which we give to kind of employer-backed health insurance. We have many health insurance companies literally directly on Obamacare Marketplace getting subsidized by the government. And we have Medicare Advantage, which is directly a subsidized program where government is cutting Medicare checks to private health insurance companies who are making profit off them. If instead of all that, we got rid of that stuff and just said tax benefits for people to contribute into health savings accounts, you contribute money fully tax-free into a health savings account. Get rid of limits, build them up as much as you want, invest them, and then spend them however you want when you need. Combined with some sort of catastrophic backup, where like government might just say, "Hey, there's a role for like in case you haven't built up enough money or a major disaster event happens, there'll be something to cover you." And then, so that's my kind of like two parts. And the third part is direct care. That I think direct primary care, concierge care. I think that from physicians I've talked to in that field, from patients, I mean, it's just like way, way better experience for everyone. Now, they still unfortunately have to deal with these insurance companies for medication authorizations, for, major stuff they have to refer out. So it's not a full solution, but what that has proven and shown is one, the consumer experience is way better. It's patient and provider the way it used to be, not a middleman. The incentives are much more aligned. Two, cost transparency and actually overall lowering of costs, which is a home run because you're paying for the visit, the doctor's getting the money, all this middleman noise and excess cost is gone, which means actually on net the cost is lower. And then I think three, just kind of everybody feels better, like more independents are able to practice. So I think what we've seen, like an example, and I wrote about this in the book, is that in other countries, like for example, Singapore, they don't have like a major private health insurance system. They have a unbelievable free market in terms of health savings accounts and healthcare providers, whether it's physicians or hospitals, dealing directly with people as consumers. And if you think about it, any other market, like let's say when you're buying groceries or you're buying stuff online or you're like getting food at a restaurant or whatever, right? It's a free market, in terms of like you are spending your own dollars. So you're way more thoughtful about it. You're way more likely to invest in things. So like in this case, in health insurance and healthcare, what they've shown is when people pay out of pocket, they're twice as likely to do preventative stuff. They're three times as likely to look around and price compare. So like consumer like benefits happen just like in any other free market, right? Prices adjust, prices go down overall, people's choices go up. People make intelligent choices, people invest in prevention. So I almost think that the health insurance system, the way it is paternalistic, where it's thinking it's doing stuff, but in reality, it's actually doing negative stuff. And, if you just like empower patients to go directly to physicians, you'll have a much better system.
Well, and I don't know if you've heard of Crowd Health. I interviewed their founder a couple weeks ago.
Oh, that's awesome.
And yeah, so he had a similar experience as far as like claims being denied and like there's got to be a better way. And I love the concept that he's driving as well, to provide like, okay, here's a way that we're going to do cash pay, right? And the other thing I want to say about that too is that for people that don't understand like that the reality behind that, I remember it was 2 years ago, it was a December because it was right at the end of our insurance cycle, right? And my son had something happen with his knee, and I was like, you know what, the pediatrician is going to be great, but I have a really good relationship with my physical therapist, and she keeps me in shape for my athletic endeavors and everything.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, I'll take him in. I was like, I'd rather just take you to the physical therapist as a knee issue. Let's just get it looked at, get everything done. Well, it's December, so I go up to, pay and everything. And the front desk is like, okay, well, what are we going to do here? And I was like, what do you mean? I was like, I've got
Yeah.
insurance. She goes, yeah, but if I bill your insurance, because the way your deductible is and what I have to bill insurance, your payment's going to be $140.
Okay.
And I was like, okay. She goes, if we do cash pay, it's $100.
There
And I was like,
you
okay.
go.
She goes, how close are you to your deductible? And I was like, not even close. And she's like, save the money, save the $40. Right. And it, and so people might go like, what is that? Well, if they don't have to spend time on billing, they don't have to spend time on all that. They get the money right now versus who knows when. Right. And so, and that's what that direct care access allows us is the doctor to go, boom, here you go. Like, yeah, I don't have to wait,
That
maybe
is a
6 months or
great
8 months.
example. Yeah, that is a
Right.
great example that you gave, and that's also cool, that they were like basically giving you transparency like that. And I think in certain major things, even like you have a $8,000 procedure, a $10,000 procedure, I've seen situations where 8,000 goes to 1,200 bucks. Like it's like the divergence is insane. And I think it's because the insurers, even in hospitals to some degree, have an incentive to artificially inflate the prices and then say, oh, look, I paid this, even though between the two of them, they paid a fraction of that, but the inflated price makes you feel like, oh, I'm so glad I have insurance, right? Wow, that would have been a disaster. Meanwhile, you ask the person, hey, how much would you do if I just gave you cash? And they're like, $1,200. And you're like, okay, dude, really? Like, so 8,000 was a completely fake price, right?
Right.
But that when they cover that and they write the thing between the insurer and the hospital, you feel like, oh, thank God I have insurance. And it's like,
Right.
well, that wasn't actually 8,000. So I think
Right.
that's another, I'm glad you brought that up, that I think price transparency in healthcare does not really exist right now. But when people are going direct, they're shocked at how much lower the prices are, which shows you how much BS the insurance mediated prices
Right.
are.
Right. And the timing of the year is huge for that, right? Like, it if you have something major happen in January or February, okay, chances are your insurance may actually help you by the end of the year, right? With all the different things that happen. Like, okay, you could probably wind up on the better side of things. But if it happens in November, December, you're screwed.
Agreed.
And it's just
I think the system, I mean, it's very clear because like the insurance companies, most of them are public and you can see their profit margins. Like they're making money on this stuff. And I mean, the whole goal is collect the premiums and like deny care, like that's become, and which I get, is like part of the business model, but it's become like overwhelmingly the denial of care has become overwhelmingly the business model.
So with that better system as a part, because that was one of the questions I was going to have is like, what other countries are doing stuff that, because and you touched on this earlier as far as like health initiatives or health or inventions or like technology level, the US is at the top.
Agreed.
Outcomes were
Way
way
down.
below where we should be. Like, and haven't been for years in the right realm. And yeah, I think so much of it is driven by, because you either get bit by the health insurance company and it affects you, and you have really negative consequences, or you just get a little bit of taste of it and then you're just like, I don't want to deal with this anymore. And so, like you said, you stop going for those checkups, you stop going for those things, so there are countries out there that are doing things differently and it's working better.
There are, and I'd say, and this is kind of an interesting thing from a policy perspective, and I suspect that this will be a hot button political topic, I think, over the next like 2, 3, 4 years, right? I was thinking about this, and the UnitedHealth CEO got shot, in December, right? The shooting happened right after the election. So at that point, it's like the even at the presidential level, the opportunity had been missed to talk about it because it was after the fact. And then I think people kind of forgot about it and moved on in a way. But I think it's just come out in the last like few weeks in New York Times that like UnitedHealth was like really suppressing critics over the last few months. So I feel like it's going to be talked about more. But I think if you kind of project out, I think it's going to become a bipartisan issue because the system is very broken. The public is very outraged. And I think that was kind of like the catalyst to wake up everyone to be like, hey, wow, so many other people are going through this, right? So it's kind of like emperors not wearing clothes, that fairy tale. It's kind of like that. We're like, okay, first of all, the biggest healthcare company in the country is a health insurance company. Like that's a sham, right? And then two, the guy got shot, and like majority of public's like, whatever, right? That shows you how the public feels about their experiences dealing with it. And I think it's rightfully so. You know, when you look at these net promoter scores and stuff, the customer experience of dealing with health insurance companies is very poor. So I think that the politicians on both sides are going to realize this. And where I see a divergence now is to your point about which other countries, you know, there's almost two different models in the world, and I think we have to kind of think about as a society which one are we more philosophically aligned with. I'm more of kind of like a individual freedom type person, so I would opt for more of a model like Singapore, where there is a health savings account model where, you know, everybody gets like a lot of tax advantages to saving part of their own paycheck into health savings accounts, and then they get to fund their own care when needed. Some of their money can be used for catastrophic coverage in case like a major event like cancer or whatever happens and they don't have enough saved up in an HSA. A catastrophic plan will be provided to cover you. And then for lower income people as well as elderly citizens, they have those people will get subsidies, you know, where like the government may just put something into your accounts. So I think I'm a big advocate of a system like that because it gets rid of a lot of bureaucratically managed care. And I just believe that free thinking people who have some funding, whether it's provided to them or their own savings, can thoughtfully choose where to get the care. And, you know, free market healthcare providers, physicians, hospitals, et cetera, can provide the care. You know, so I think that a system like that works better. Some other people also point to countries like parts of Northern Europe or even UK or Canada, which have a little bit more of a centralized system where it's like there's less role of private health insurance and government is the health insurance. I think, you know, in some way, like that goes against every grain of my being. But I think compared to this current joke of system we have, I think that actually would still work better because you would get rid of like right now, in a way, right now, my opinion is we have the worst of both worlds. We have a massive bureaucracy, but the bureaucracy isn't just like a government that doesn't have a profit motive. The bureaucracy is worse, where it's like you don't have a lot of choice, and the bureaucracy is siphoning away a lot of the money for itself. So I could see that a government-run system will still be an improvement to our current system, mainly because there's so much market concentration that there's no sense of a free market anymore. It's like, I've thought about this of like, why don't I start an insurance company? Well, I can't. In North Carolina, they're not going to let one, right? Like, there's a handful of companies here that run it, and the barrier to starting one is so high. I'm sure same in Texas. Like, good luck starting a health insurance company, right? That's why that guy's probably doing crowd health because it's like a little bit of a workaround. But I think that's a challenge that because we don't have a free market and such market concentration, it's a broken industry. So I think in some, Northern European countries, a full socialized government-run healthcare works well. I think the best healthcare works in fully free market countries like Singapore or other. But I think that, I suspect in the next few years in politics, one or both of those choices are going to be pushed because the current system ain't working.
Well, and I
And
could.
to your point about the money, like, yeah, I mean, like most of these, like US is spending 2 to 3 times on healthcare as a percent of GDP, what most developed countries are spending. And it's having like one of the worst outcomes in terms of life expectancies. That's freaking terrible.
Well, I think the free market side of it I think you'd see if that was to like come out and go like, okay, we're going to change this, you know, January 1st, this is going to be available. The number of physicians you would see opening up doors somewhere, I think would skyrocket, right? Like
And that would be
so
a
many of
great
them,
for society.
right? And then you also get, you know, you also get the older physician passing on knowledge to the younger physician who's going to take over the practice and going to get to meet everybody. And you don't get that, which we went through years ago because my wife used to work for one of the hospitals in town. There's two major systems in town, and our doctor moved to the other one. The system we were in had a health insurance package, and they said, "Oh, well, if you're going to have a doctor from the other system, your deductible is going to be $25,000 more than
Oh
if you
my
stay in our
God.
system," because they were
Seriously,
there because they
man?
fight against each other, and we're just like, "Oh my gosh, right? Like what a headache!" And so, in a free market system, you don't have that. You get to pick who you want, and somebody upsets you, you find somebody else, and you don't have to worry about, are they in my network? Are they doing this? Are they doing that? And you know, it may cost more because they're a better doctor and they charge more.
But you know, it may cost less because
It
you don't
may
have all
cost
this
less.
middleman BS that somebody else. See, I think that my biggest theory on this thing is that the middleman is siphoning off more value than other people in the system who are adding the value. You know, like I think that the doctor's not, you know, it's like look at how difficult it is to be a doctor in America. Most doctors are not living large. They have gone through years and years of undergraduate school, medical school, residency. Many doctors I know in their 30s are still in multi-hundred thousand dollars of
Oh,
debt,
yeah.
and they're making okay money. Like, don't get me wrong, they're not poor, but they're not rich by any means. And they have endured a lot to get to that point. And you're like, oh, maybe they have a line of sight, but by the time I'm 50, I might have paid off all my loans and have a nice house and blah, blah, after working my butt off for this long. And then maybe by the time I'm 65, 70, I can have a modest retirement. But I mean, this is like, for how intense and stressful that profession is, the payoff is not what it used to be. It's because the insurance companies have captured majority of the value. And then on top of that, the burnout. The burnout is real. A lot of them are like retiring early because they're like, I'm sick of this. I don't want to deal with this. So I think that, and then the next generation of people, students who might want to go into these fields are seeing what the people above them are. And they're like, wait, I'm going to go into this field just so I can become a slave of the health insurance company. Like, I'm not actually practicing the art of healthcare or of medicine. I'm just like pushing paperwork, So yeah, I think it's like, you're right. I think if we got rid of that, I think there would be a abundance of doctors, like people who would leave existing large systems, people who have left already the field might come back, new people might rush to enter the field. Yeah, I think, and given the aging population that we have in the country and how much healthcare we're going to need over the next 5 to 10 years, yeah, we definitely need more doctors, not less.
Yeah, and the other piece of that is like being able to have the freedom to spend time with people, right? Because the amount of time that people
Great.
get because the insurance companies are saying, no, you only get this much time.
Yeah, that is another
That's,
great point.
you
I'm
know.
glad you brought that up because the average appointment on these insurance-mediated doctor appointments might be like 15 minutes, right? A lot of the private practice docs that are doing like direct care, even that are doing functional health, like a lot of these physicians nowadays are spending 45 minutes, hour and a half with you. It's like, good luck. Like my mom has rheumatoid arthritis, and she visited a bunch of traditional rheumatologists, like 10, 15 minutes in and out, months and months to get an appointment, whatever, and then went functional health route and met with a bunch of people, and it was like hour and a half. Spend a lot of time getting to know you, and you know what? Guess what worked? That, So yeah, it's a big difference when somebody actually spends a lot of time getting to know you. And I think it's also a psychological difference too. You feel like the other person actually like cares about me, cares for me. There's higher trust, So yeah, agree with all
Well,
that.
and I'm sure you see this through the caregiving piece of it too, is that, you know, when you go and if you were to go and spend 15 minutes with somebody you're trying to give care to, like you're going to get such a small snippet of their life, and they're going to tell you the two or three major things that are going on. But if you're there for an hour, there's so many different things that pop up, and you're just like, oh, hey, why'd you say that? You know, oh, well, this thing happened 2 weeks ago. I didn't think it was a big deal, but I'm still thinking about it. It's still rumored. And it's like, oh, okay, well, that's obviously a stressor, right? Different
You're
things like
right.
that that pop up that, yeah, when you've got that 15 minutes or less, it's like, this is my problem. And you could get the wrong prescription based on why is that your problem? Nobody ever asked you the question. And so two or three things that caused it. But you're like, well, this is where my pain is.
Yeah, you're 100% right. 100% right. Yeah,
And
so I think
that
we
stinks.
really need to go back to that.
So you mentioned the book a couple of times. I know it's on Amazon. The what other ways can we support what you're doing and follow along with things that you're doing and information you're
So
putting out?
I think the main thing, out of the mission of the book is if anybody out there is dealing with denied insurance claims, whether you're a doctor, any kind of clinician, physician assistant, nurse, social worker, you're working at a clinic, you're working at a hospital, we built and or you're a patient, we built a suite of free AI tools to help you fight back. That's kind of like the main mission of our work. Like, we're so frustrated by the system. So we run those at what we call Counterforce Health. And it's www.counterforcehealth.org. And you can go there and use the suite of AI tools to help you create appeals. And basically, it's like an AI system that has been trained on tens of thousands of successful appeals and appeal strategies based on medication necessity, based on billing code errors. It can pull from research databases and medical journals to cite, kind of robust citations for why you need something. It can also scan through your policy coverage docs in, like 200 page docs in like less than 20 seconds. And, basically start to finish, the system can generate you a really good quality letter in like less than 2 minutes, which is something even professionals would take 3 to 5 hours to do. So we are saving tons of clinics like dozens of hours of time a week, and that's really awesome. The system is fully free to use. We've actually gotten it grant funded through Research University. We're in the process of accelerating our work, so a lot of people in the research community love the tools, and even people at NIH are like supportive of it. So that's really awesome. So if anyone's kind of going through that, you know, definitely reach out there. And then I think our main mission, you know, which is like what inspired all this, is our caregiving platform, Cariaya. You know, we are running a platform across the country, connecting people, mostly people like us, you know, sandwich generation people who are caring for aging parents while taking care of children, and people who need help with aging parents. We connect them with healthcare students at, you know, some of the great universities in America. We're at over 30 universities now and expanding fast. We have over 40,000 students doing care on our platform.
Wow.
And best of all, yeah, it's like very affordable rates. So in most markets, traditional home care might cost $30 to $40 an hour, and Cariaya operates at $20 an hour.
Nice.
So if people want like convenient, affordable help that they can book conveniently online, it's about as easy to book as like an Uber or like an Airbnb. You know, you can check and reach out to us to see if we're in your area. But the site is careyaya.org, CareYaya.org. And yeah, it's awesome. Like, it's awesome to see. These are our future doctors and, you know, people in nursing school, people in physical therapy school or pre-physical therapy, people want to be physician assistants. So they love doing the care because they're doing it as not for the money, but for the experience and helping people before they go into a clinical career. And they're just so positive and energized, you know, because for them, this is like a transitional point. And then older adults, you know, that we help, many people living with dementia, many people living with terminal cancer, you know, other times physical frailty, they love interacting with students. You know, it's just like a cool intergenerational relationship where it reminds many people of their grandkids. You know, the relationships built are really awesome and authentic and genuine. So yeah, if anyone needs help caring for aging parents, definitely reach out, you know, to us at Cariaya. And then I'm pretty active on like social media. I'd say LinkedIn is our probably most active thing. So yeah, if you want to message me or you have any thoughts, I always like love to hear ideas from people and find people to collaborate with. So just hit me up. It's Neal, N-E-A-L, and then middle initial K, and then last name S-H-A-H.
Cool.
Neal Shah, Cariaya on LinkedIn. So yeah,
awesome.
Hit me up anytime on socials.
Awesome. Well, I mean, I'll put all those links in the show notes so that they're easy to access.
Great.
And yeah, and so is there anything, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of stuff we didn't touch on, right?
Yeah.
That's like, oh my gosh, these are things people need to know. But as we end, like, is there something that people that are struggling with these issues that are like, okay, I don't, you know, and maybe even the doctor's office doesn't care, the hospital doesn't care. They're just like, I don't, you know, like, what would you tell those people as like, okay, it you know, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
What do they need to do for the next step?
Yeah. So if you're dealing with any of this kind of insurance fighting situation, like, first of all, you know, reach out to me. I'm happy to send you a free copy. Like, I've like actually put a bunch of the book into just a simple guide on how to fight back. And like, we list it on Amazon, but it's like, to be honest, like, I don't, you know, we're not doing this for the money, and Amazon takes the majority of the money anyway, so we don't get anything. So I'm happy to just like email you a PDF. Like, it doesn't really matter to me. Like, I feel like the work is like valuable to people. And if it can, one additional people can be helped, that's awesome. Like, that's fulfilled the mission. So yeah, email me. I'd be happy to send you. But we have written comprehensive guides on this stuff. The tools themselves are free, so obviously feel free to use them. But many people have a difficulty using technology, so you know, they may not be well-versed. If you want help, but you don't know how to use the technology, reach out to us. And we actually, I mean, what's really awesome when you do mission-driven work is that people step up to help your mission. And so many students that are doing caregiving in their heard about what we're doing, and they're like, oh, I will help. Like, and I will help people who don't know how to use AI and who don't know how to use tech. So now we started having a bunch of them join as patient advocates. So a bunch of students around the country are just sitting there fielding phone calls with patients and then doing the AI system themselves and sending letters back out. So I think that's been awesome to see. And the double impact of that is, one, we're able to help people who are not as tech fluent. But then two, it's like a lot of these young people are like seeing how broken the health insurance system is. And I feel like the cool thing is that a lot of times young people are like much more vocal and like, I'd say active, you know, in terms of like for causes they believe in. And I feel that that societal conversation is going to change as like people realize, like, when you do, you know, if you're like a 21-year-old person and you're in college and you're like, I'm a pre-med student at, you know, Texas A&M, and you're like, okay, I called this like 72-year-old guy in my community who's living with cancer, and, you know, insurance denied this medication that he desperately needs.
Right.
I mean, you start getting like, one, you get empathy, but you also get outraged, and you're like, what kind of system is this? Right. And I feel like when you have a lot of people seeing that, they will push for change pretty fast. So I think that's really awesome to see. So yeah, reach out to us, like, even if you can't use the tech, and we'll figure out a way to help you.
Well, and the other piece of that is like in 5 or 10 years, those people are going to be the ones prescribing the medication, doing it to, and they're going to be going like, no, this is not right.
Yes.
Right.
And some
And
of those
so
people are going to be
building
in
that.
government, you know, they're
Yeah.
going to be in government, they're going to be at big hospitals. I mean, I think those people are going to be in a position where they can make a change in the world. And yeah, I think that that's really, and
That's
frankly,
huge.
those people also have parents, you know, let's not forget that, right?
Right.
Somebody's mom and dad might be a senator right now, and they visit home for Thanksgiving and they say, hey, here's what I'm doing. And now that government official is like, whoa, that's really what's going on in the community? Because, like, a lot of times I feel like people in the government, you know, I'd say to give people the benefit of the doubt, I think a lot of times people in government don't know because some of these things, when I dealt with it personally, I didn't tell people because one, it's you think it's your own personal problem that, oh, the insurance company screwed you. You didn't realize it screwed everyone else too. And then you're also a little bit embarrassed because it's like a financial matter and you don't want to discuss it that, hey, there's a major illness going on and I'm worried about a few thousand bucks of bills. Like, okay, that's like kind of not something you want to openly share with people. So I think that's something where I do believe, like, I've talked to a lot of state insurance commissioners and almost to the person, they're well-intentioned people. And when we say, hey, look what's going on in the community, how many denials? They're like, wow, really? Like, I didn't realize how bad the problem was. So I think that's like, if one thing that happened, I think with the incident, you know, in December, you know, with the UnitedHealth CEO, I think it's like, it was eye-opening to everyone that, wow, so many people are dealing with this. And then subsequent articles that have come out on Wall Street Journal and New York Times, like on the magnitude of the claim denial crisis. You know, there's one article that said over 60 million American adults have dealt with a denied claim in the last year. So if you're one of those people and you think, oh man, my bad luck, and then you see that in the paper, and you're like, wait, me and 60 million other people, right? Like that, it's like, okay, that's a system. That's not my bad.
Yeah, that's a system. That's not somebody put the wrong code,
Exactly.
right?
It's like, and then it makes you wonder, is something happening on purpose?
Oh, amazing. Well, Neil, I want to thank you. This has been a great conversation.
Thanks,
I'm
Jerry.
definitely going to recommend people reach out to you for help because
Cool.
and use the tools because, you know, like I said, I've had claims denied. You know, most of them were small, but you know, it's just that, you know, you never know when that's going to be the thing around the corner for you. You know, in the impact, as you said, it, you know, all the way up to bankruptcy is just
Profound.
it's tragic that that's even a part of the conversation.
Agreed. And it doesn't have to be. So happy to help. Happy to help send free guides to anyone and help you use these tools and appeal. And if you can't use them, we're happy to help. You know, you get connected with students who can guide you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Neil.
Cool. Thanks so much, Jerry. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks for checking out the Confidence Through Health podcast. Please subscribe, post a review, share this episode with those you love who need a little extra help with their health journey. Visit allinhealthandwellness.com to learn more about the coaching programs that I provide. All episodes are produced by the Social Media Cowboys, your source for all online marketing needs. Go to socialmediacowboys.com for more information.